Hi, everyone. Welcome back to an edition of JNPO Classic here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm your host, Josh Nason, writer, editor, host of Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on the website. Hope you guys are having a great week whenever you're listening to this. This is my look back in the archives of the WGAM MMA show, a show I did on ESPN New Hampshire with my friend PJ Hewitt. And that show ran from, 2011 through early 2012 before an unceremonial cancellation, the story of which we will get to in later episodes. This is, we've done a few of these so far, and I'm woefully behind, so I apologize for that. So we are going to catch up here over the next week or so and get everyone caught up to speed. So hopefully these will be released once a week. I'm listening to these several at a time now, taking notes. So hopefully I'll be a little bit more professional and get these up on time. And I appreciate you guys listening to them. I know sometimes that retro audio and classic audio isn't exactly top of mind because there's so much other stuff going on. However, some of these are pretty fun to kind of look back at, and I've been having a blast listening to them, listening to my own voice, which is kind of weird, but you know how that goes. And again, for those that are new here, this is I also host a podcast called Josh Nason's Punch-Out, which I mentioned, which goes almost every 2 weeks. I try to do a weekly show, sometimes a couple a week, just kind of interviewing media people, occasionally fighters, and talking about MMA and occasionally pro wrestling if the mood strikes. And we have some good guests coming up here over the next couple months as we rock and roll through the summer. So let's go back to the summer of 2011. This episode was recorded on June 16th, 2011. The MMA show was recorded on Thursday nights. So this show, this was reviewing UFC 131, which had just happened in Vancouver, Canada. And the Boston Bruins had just won the Stanley Cup, I believe, the night before or two nights before. So we talked about some of the MMA and Stanley Cup tie-ins, one of which you might be thinking, how the hell is that mixed? Tim Thomas, who was the Boston Bruins goalie at the time, and someone I actually did a feature on for Fight Magazine. We talked about that tie-in. But also, if you guys remember, unfortunately, when Vancouver, the Bruins were playing Vancouver, and after Vancouver lost, the city basically lost its shit and decided to kind of just, do some riots, and there was fires everywhere in this beautiful city. They just not torched the ground, but they jacked it up pretty good. It was pretty embarrassing if you're a Vancouver fan, what they did to that city. And as we talk about in the show, there was a big controversy with the city of Vancouver's police department and the UFC because the city wanted the UFC to pay for extra security because they were worried about all these rowdy fans and problems. There was no issues at the UFC show, but there was all these issues a week later after the Canucks lost the Stanley Cup. So go figure there. So we talk about a little bit about that. Jury Dos Santos' big win on that show, so you'll, against Shane Carwin. So Kenny Florian had a big win. So you'll hear about that. We also did one of the things we talked about was how 3 weeks of shows were too much. Imagine fast forwarding to today when I think we're in the midst of a 7 or 11 straight weeks run or something. Something like that with just shows almost every single weekend is crazy. Three straight weeks seems like a godsend. But I talked to PJ and I, rather, we talked to a local fighter named Noah Wiseman. I don't even know if Noah's even still fighting. He was competing for World Cage Fighting, not World Cage Fighting, WCF, which now I can't remember what the letters stand for, is an organization out of Massachusetts I don't believe is still running shows. He was competing as Dan Lozon, the brother of Joe Lozon. So you might initially be thinking, okay, this guy never fought in the UFC. I have no idea who he is. Why would I want to listen to him? Here's why I would urge you to check this out. In this era of the McGregor types and everyone trying to do their best to sell themselves, do promos, all this stuff, Noah is he wasn't a full-time professional fighter at the time. He was also he actually sold cars. And he talked about the importance of selling oneself in social media, looking for sponsors. And it was a really good indication of how local MMA fighters had to carry themselves in that day, and actually today as well. So I thought a lot of what he said back then in 2011 went really pertinent here today. Really well-spoken guy. It was just interesting hearing how he went about the business of marketing himself. So I think if you guys are in kind of that aspect of the business, it's worth the listen. What else did we talk about? I did a sell job on PJ on watching Strikeforce. He was not that familiar with Strikeforce and hadn't watched a ton of it. And we talked about the at that time the upcoming Strikeforce Grand Prix, which was featuring Alistair Overeem versus Fabricio Werdum, a fight we just saw a few days ago, ironically enough. And then Josh Barnett versus Brett Rogers. Brett Rogers, he of the current imprisonment for a lot of bad things, turned out to be not a very good guy, but he was set to fight Josh Barnett, and also a young heavyweight prospect you may have heard of, the current UFC light heavyweight champion, Daniel Cormier. So, without further ado, I'm going to get out of the way and enjoy the June 16th, 2011 edition of the WGAM MMA show featuring an interview with former fighter Noah Weisman. The Boston Bruins win the Stanley Cup, and we talk about the tie into MMA. We preview two events coming up this Saturday. And yes, it's true, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup. It's Thursday, June 16th, and the WGAM MMA show is live. Josh Nason, PJ Hewitt here. A euphoric state of mind, I would say.
I'm pretty happy about it, yeah.
Very happy about it.
I've enjoyed my day today.
The Boston Bruins, as you know, are the Stanley Cup champions. If you're listening to us and you're not in the New England area and you don't own a TV, nor have the internet, I don't know how you'd be listening to the show then, but yes, 39 years of torment, sadness, and
heartbreak,
and watching every other Boston sports team win a title. PJ, you're wearing a Bruins hat as I stare at you right now, and what are your thoughts?
Overjoyed, elation, just an overwhelming sense of relief. I haven't been able to stop smiling since late last night. Dancing around in my basement, I popped a bottle of champagne to help celebrate. It's been a fantastic almost 24 hours now.
So you had basically a Ric Flair style celebration.
Yes, absolutely. Very styling good. And profiling.
So limousine riding, wheeling, dealing, son.
No limo rides. That would have been fun too. But
son of a gun. So we have a lot to talk about tonight. This is not a hockey show. However, there are some tie-ins to the Stanley Cup, the Bruins, Vancouver, and MMA. We'll get to those in a second. Big show tonight. We are talking about UFC 131, which just happened last Saturday. Strikeforce this Saturday. If you've never watched Strikeforce, not familiar with it, we're going to give you a nice little primer, kind of a beginner's guide to Strikeforce. We'll do that in our last segment of the night. We're going to talk about World Championship Fighting this Saturday, a local event in Massachusetts. Talking to Noah Weisman, who's going to challenge for the WCF lightweight title against Dan Lauzon. So we'll be talking to Noah here in a little bit. However, let's kick off tonight. We're going to talk about MMA tie-ins to the Stanley Cup, a very newsworthy event, obviously, last night. So if you're not familiar, the Game 7 took place in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And a week prior, UFC 131 took place there. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So there was huge rioting after the event. Just
after the Game 7 loss in Vancouver.
Just awful. Just cars turned over. If you've seen shots of the skyline, it looked like a war-torn country. It was just awful. There's obviously, social media went crazy last night, giving all these different, pictures and recaps and all this stuff, and it's just terrible. So it's interesting that a week prior, UFC 131 took place the same exact spot. Obviously, not as many people. The event didn't sell out, but still there was a good amount of people, obviously, in the facility. However, outside, not nearly the amount that were outside for Game 7. The police chief in Vancouver before the UFC event decides to say to the UFC, well, if you want extra security outside, you're going to have to pay for it. They didn't want to pay for any extra crowd control or anything like that. UFC said, no, we're not going to do that. There's really not a need to do that. We haven't done that with other cities, so we're not going to do that here. Essentially, the city or the police chief is upset because the first event that took place in Vancouver a year prior, there was a hate crime committed somewhere around the city, and they tried to tie that back to the UFC. And this whole MMA thing, and just this whole back and forth of the city. Vancouver's kind of weird like that. So they basically, there's kind of a standoff there. Event went off, no problems. And, of course, there was no riding, no issues or anything like that. It's kind of funny. You go to last night, and the place goes crazy. So, again, MMA trying to be vilified for having rowdy fans and craziness and all this stuff. Be at the sport that is legal everywhere, including New York. They can't have a Game 7 without things just going berserk.
Yeah, it's really sad to see. You know, you don't want to see that anywhere, you know, win or loss from by any team, you know, but the fans of any team. And it really put a black mark on the city of Vancouver, which by all accounts is, you know, supposed to be a very I've never been, but a very beautiful city. And with you'd think the Pacific Northwest, the attitude is a little more laid back in that area of the country, and or, you know, both Canada and the U.S. But to see that, yeah, just fires, overturned cop cars, people just getting into fights, and, you know, it was really, really sad to see. And I'm really glad that didn't happen in Boston, because that was a big concern from Mayor Menino in Boston, too, that there was going to be this type of rioting. I think the closest thing I saw to that is people just kind of shaking a bus that they shot from a helicopter. You could see that. But other than that, there was, you know, just really joy and no problems at all in Boston.
So speaking of Boston, there is an MMA tie in there as well, as Tim Thomas, the, I don't know if there's even a description to tag to Tim Thomas that would fit exactly what he did in the Stanley Cup Finals and really all season long. Huge UFC fan, actually huge MMA fan in general. And I did a story on him in April's issue of Fight Magazine. It's also available on the fightmagazine.com website, which actually got linked today by Yahoo. So I'll give myself a feather in my cap that I'm not wearing. And so one of the cool things is, so I talked to Tim Thomas all about MMA. He's loved it since the early days. His brother helped get him into it. And one of the cool things is that after game, so a hockey game gets over, you know, starts at 7, ends at, 10 o'clock generally, maybe 10:30 if they go to overtime, depending on how the flow of the game is. So the players, you know, they meet with the media, they decide to maybe go get something to eat afterwards, or they just kind of chill out. They don't get home like right afterwards. Some guys live a little further away. So Tim Thomas, what he does is he DVRs the pay-per-views, the events and things like that. He gets home. He doesn't go to bed and say, well, I'm going to watch the thing the next morning, or I'm going to watch it whenever I can. He watches it that night. And he says it does make his wife very happy that he does that. He doesn't come right to bed when he gets home from the games. And so he doesn't want to be spoiled the next day when he goes in the locker room. Because guys like you mentioned Sean Thornton and Zdeno Chara are also big fans. So they often talk about it. And he says, I'm not going to be left out of the conversation.
Yeah, well, Zdeno Chara's father was an Olympic wrestler. So, yeah, that kind of fits.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And he probably would be a wrestler himself if he didn't go into hockey.
That's a big dude to be a wrestler.
Oh, I know. He's a huge dude to be a wrestler.
So I thought it was...
He'd be fighting 265, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Imagine Zdeno Chara getting... Now my mind's spinning. But that
him and Stefan Struve would be the tallest fight ever.
Oh, boy. So Tim Thomas, a big fan. Sean Thornton, last week, the weigh-ins at 131. Sean Thornton gave Kenny Florian, one of our guests, last week on the WGAM MMA show, gave him a jersey to wear. He was booed vociferously at the weigh-ins, booed even more so the next night. And we'll get to 131 right now. But overall, there's some unique tie-ins there, both from the good side with Boston and some of their players being big fans, and also the negative side with the Vancouver, 1 week after hosting a great UFC event and torched, not to the ground, but they're hurting today. So, actually, we'll get to UFC 131 from Vancouver, and let's start right from the top. Junior Dos Santos, Shane Carwin, the main event of the night. Turns out that Junior Dos Santos, it was this fight that he had to basically re-earn his number one contender spot. Well, he cemented that, won a unanimous decision, almost took out Carwin in the first round with just a flurry of punches, hurt Carwin. Herb Dean could have stopped the fight, get a lot of credit afterwards for not doing it. Depending on how far where you kind of sit on that, it could have been stopped. But Dos Santos was able to basically just pick him apart for two rounds and earn a decision, messed up Carwin's face some good, and he's going on to fight Cain Velasquez sometime this fall.
Yeah, Shane Carwin, after that first round, was really, really beat up. Nose busted, cut under one eye. At the end of the fight, he had another big cut under his other eye. They mentioned on the broadcast, I think Joe Rogan said that his wife had her eyes covered, that she couldn't even watch the end of that first round because he got beat up really bad. And he did show that he worked on his cardio and his conditioning a little bit, able to get through the entire fight. Unfortunately for him, Junior Dos Santos was taking a book out of George St. Pierre and just jabbed and jabbed and jabbed and jabbed and ended up getting a couple takedowns at one point in the fight. And he didn't finish him, but I thought looked really good. And it especially going into a fight with Cain Velasquez, who's known for his conditioning and his toughness and his his ability to defend takedowns or get that right back up, as he showed against Brock Lesnar. You know, Lesnar took Cain Velasquez down and he was up right away. And you'd never seen that ever, especially from a wrestler like Brock Lesnar. So Junior Dos Santos is going to have a really tough fight. His one saving grace is Cain Velasquez is coming off a long layoff from an injury. So maybe that plays a factor into it, but it should be a very interesting fight. I think, is it October or November?
They haven't determined yet because they're still not sure. Cain is recovering now a little bit slower from the shoulder surgery. So Cain Velasquez, so after the Lesnar fight, decided to get surgery on his shoulder. He's been hurting for a while, so he's been out for, like PJ said, a long time. So I believe it's going to be November is kind of what they're looking at right now. Yeah, if Cain comes back the way he did, the way he could perform against Brock, you brought how he popped right back after that takedown. That's what I knew in that fight. I'm like, oh boy, Brock's in trouble, because that was effortless. And Cain, I have a feeling Cain's already opened up as a favorite in this fight. I think you have to favor Cain going into this. Dos Santos is great, but you know he's had the chances to beat and finish guys like Roy Nelson, Shane Carwin in back-to-back fights, and hasn't been able to do it. And obviously, he's been dominant in both of them, but you kind of look for that. You're going to have to try to finish Cain Velasquez in order to beat him. I don't think you're going to outlast him over five rounds.
No, especially, like we mentioned, his conditioning is so good. They're going to be fighting in about the same weight. Both guys come in around 245. So it should be really interesting to see, and I would expect this fight to go the distance. I don't think one guy will necessarily finish the other guy. If it ends up being finished, I think it'll probably be a Velasquez finish. But this is one of those fights. Expect 25 minutes of maybe a fight of the night.
Co-main event of the evening.
There it is.
Kenny Florian, we just talked about a minute ago, defeated Diego Nunez by unanimous decision. Looked good all throughout the fight. Nunez looked tired at some points, which I thought was a little surprising. And did get in some good shots, including a shot to end the third that had Florian down on one knee for a minute. Florian he looked good. He didn't look dominant in terms of like he's got to get the next title shot. But he did what he had to do. He won. He didn't look drawn out at all. He was able to last all 15 minutes. Obviously, what we talked about with him last week, he cut down to 145 for the first time. And he seemed to be fine. So I think he seems to be kind of the front runner for a title shot based on really, I guess, a lack of other sellable fighters right now at 145. So it looks like we'll have to see. Kenny Florian could be getting another title shot.
Yeah, and Diego Nunez, I heard, and apparently I'm going to have to lean on you a lot more for the rest of the fights on this card. I was busy over the weekend. I had some things going on, so I did not get a chance to see any of the fights except for the Dos Santos and the Carwin fight. But from what I heard, Diego Nunez landed some shots that could have probably put down another featherweight, but because of the toughness and just the size of Kenny Florian, that he was just able to just kind of take those shots. And you mentioned that one that dropped him in the third round, and able to outlast him. And that might, I think, from what I heard, helped him out a lot in the fight.
Yeah. I mean, Diego Nunez is definitely a prospect. He's young enough, and this was a nice, good test for him. He certainly didn't get embarrassed or completely overmatched. I mean, it was definitely a pretty even fight overall. Florian just did enough to win. So Nunez is a guy that could be, I think you'd be seeing a little bit more of in the next year.
Yeah, he's still very young.
Absolutely. Let's go through the rest of the card here real quick. Mark Munoz defeated Damian Maia by unanimous decision. I like this fight a lot. It was a lot of grappling, a lot of attempted takedowns, but really, actually, I should rephrase that. It was mostly both guys trying to show off their stand-up, and especially Maia. You tend to wonder about that, like why he wouldn't try to go for more takedowns and try to demonstrate some of that jiu-jitsu. On the flip side, a guy like Mark Munoz, great, I'd say Olympic caliber wrestler, but just like one of those guys that just, he is a wrestler by nature, and he just, you know, he didn't try to go for many takedowns either. So it was very entertaining, though. It was three good rounds, and Munoz defeated Maia by unanimous decision. We then had Dave Herman making his debut against John Olav Einemo, who also is making his debut. This is pretty much a typical heavyweight slobber knocker, so to speak. Herman defeated Einemo by TKO in the second round. Really close fight, a lot of back and forth, which was fun.
Heard Herman was smiling as he was getting hit during that fight.
Yep, he was. There was actually two good heavyweight fights on this. The Einemo-Herman fight was good, and that ended up winning fight of the night. And also on the undercard, actually it was on Spike. Joey Beltran, Aaron Rosa. Beltran defeated Rosa via third round TKO. That was a lot of, Joe Rogan put it, rock'em sock'em robot style, just to kind of head down, just swinging left, rights, back and forth. So that was pretty fun. That could have been a fight of the night. It was definitely a fight of the night candidate for sure. So yeah, two good heavyweight fights. If you kind of like the big guys slugging it out, round out the main card on pay-per-view. Donald Cerrone beat Wagner Rocha by unanimous decision. Just leg kicks from hell is probably the best way to describe it. A lot of decisions on the night. I give the overall event, I give it a thumbs in the middle. It wasn't anything that I came away the next day and was like, wow, I can't wait to read or hear about or talk about this. It just happened to be kind of it was a good event. I think what hurt it is probably three straight weeks of events, and
a little oversaturation.
Yeah, it thinned out the cards a bit, and I don't think you need three straight weeks. I love MMA, but I think at some point three straight weeks is a little bit much. And also probably the other really notable item from the night, Sam Stout knocking out Eze Edwards in the first round. Just
heard it was very one-sided.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it lasted less than 2 minutes. Overhand left.
I'd say that's one-sided.
Yep. Just knocked him out flat. Edwards hit.
Living up to the nickname Hands of Stone, Sam Stout.
Just rocked back, hit his head off the mat, and was done. Absolutely done. So it's one of those knockouts you kind of have to see to appreciate. So, UFC 131 is, thumbs in the middle, some decent fights, and overall it was okay, and those type of things happen. So we're going to get to our first break of the evening, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Noah Wiseman from World Championship Fighting, competing for the WCF lightweight title this Saturday night. So come back and join us. This is the WGAM MMA show on ESPN Radio, WGAM The Game. We are back on the WGAM MMA show. Glad you're with us. Josh Nason, PJ Hewitt here on a Thursday night. First segment talked a lot about UFC 131, the close ties between the Stanley Cup playoffs and MMA. And this segment, we're going to talk a little about World Championship Fighting. Noah Wiseman supposed to join us tonight. He'll be calling in just a minute. Noah Wiseman challenges, I would keep saying Joe Lozon, Dan Lozon.
Yes.
For the WCF 155-pound title. The event is this Saturday night. Again, World Championship Fighting. It is in Wilmington, at the Shriners Auditorium, Wilmington, Massachusetts. WCF puts on a lot of good events and has a lot of alumni that are currently in the big time or have been seen in the big time. Chuck O'Neill, who we've talked to before, Josh Grisby, and a few other ones.
It's interesting. I've never been to a WCF event before. So have you?
I have not. I've talked with the owners before, and they put out some good stuff. They've been off, actually, for quite a while. So they're bringing this back, and it should be good. They use the ring format as opposed to a cage, which is a little bit different. And yeah,
with ropes?
With like ropes.
Rings with ropes?
Yeah, so think like the old Pride era. Trying to think, not a lot of people actually use ring ropes anymore. Affliction did for their few events and things like that. I kind of like the cage a little bit better for a visual, and I think today's mainstream fan kind of gets the concept of the cage a little bit more. But so yeah, WCF coming up this Saturday. Let's actually run down the card here real quick. I'm actually looking at their site. If you go to wcfighting.com, at the top you see a very familiar face. That would be Glenn Big Baby Davis, who has been to events before. And that guy, he was talking to Dana White on Twitter the other night, and they were talking about him going to Las Vegas and him actually attending the next UFC event coming up soon. This Saturday night, the Shriners Auditorium, Wilmington, Massachusetts. Tickets are still available. Doors open at 6:30. The first fight is at 7:30. Again, headlined by Dan Lozon versus Noah Wiseman. And we have Noah on the line?
We do.
Cool. So welcome to the WGAM MMA show, the man that will challenge Dan Lozon for the 155-pound WCF Lightweight Championship. It's Noah Wiseman. Noah, how are you doing tonight?
Great, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, doing really good here.
Good, good. So you're in Burlington, Vermont, is that right?
Correct, yep.
No, okay, so this is going to be kind of your coming out party. We're going to introduce you to the world here. So you're a relatively young fighter. You're 5-1. A guy that's fighting in a state that does not have MMA legalized in it yet.
It's not legalized, but there's a lot of, they do a lot of MMA events up here. It's just kind of how kind of handled how it was how it wasn't regulated in mass up until last year. It's handled that way. So there are events, and there's plenty of competitors out here. Just we're yet to have a regulation.
Gotcha. So tell the world how you got started.
Well, I started off training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Julio Fernandez, who was a Carlton Gracie senior seventh degree black belt. And we all know that Carlton was kind of one of the originators of the sport. Mm-hmm. And Julio grew up with, you know, Murilo Bustamante, Ricardo Laborio, De La Riva. He grew up with everybody, you know, all the original guys. Those are the guys that he grew up with. He grew up with, you know, Enzo Gracie, Hoyce, the whole family. Hickson was a good buddy of his. And, you know, Julio kind of, he came out here. He started teaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in the late 90s. And that's how I ended up starting, you know. So
when did you start?
Pardon me, I lost you there.
Sorry, when did you start? What year?
I started training, I want to say 2002, I'm going to say.
Okay. So the decision often to go from, say, training in a individual discipline to actually saying, I want to go fight, that sometimes could be a big jump for people. Did you always have that intention to eventually compete and fight, or is that something that kind of just came along and you're like, man, I really want to try this?
Yeah, it kind of came along because you know, one of the guys that I was training with, I'm sure you'll recognize him, Tom Murphy. He trained with me half the time back then, and you know, he moved through the rankings. You know, he moved. He did all the local stuff. He started off with reality fighting, and before he even started jiu-jitsu, I mean, he was an all-American wrestler as well. So that obviously helps really largely. But anyhow. He started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he started fighting, and then he went from reality fighting to King of the Cage, and then he did the Ultimate Fighter television series, Series 2, and then he fought for the UFC after that, and he still fights now. And, you know, watching him just kind of move through it like that was quite the inspiration, and getting to train with him and spar with him and learn beside him, you know, it made me... You know, it really interested me, and it made me love the sport that much more. And I was like, you know what? I want to give this a whirl. So there we went, and I did it too.
So you had your first fight in June 2009, ironically or coincidentally, at a WCF event. You won by a rear naked choke submission, then you fought a couple months later. Same thing. So safe to say submissions are a favor of yours?
Yeah, of course. You know, I started off with jiu-jitsu. If I can take it to the ground and have my way with somebody down there and look for the sub, then I'd like to do that. That's usually an easy one, you know. If you can get it to the ground and make someone tap, I think it's easier to make someone tap than it is to TKO them, you know. Especially with a guy like Danny, he's a tough guy. So I anticipate, you know, me punching him, even the ref in there is going to let me punch him a lot. I'm quite sure. If I'm looking for a TKO, I'm probably going to have to punch him, you know, for minutes on end, because he's got a reputation as being a tough guy. So it's not something that they're going to just jump in and stop if he can't defend himself. They're going to give him a chance. So it's definitely, you know, if I'm looking for, if I see a sub, I'll take it, put it that way.
Now, you're coming into this fight on a three-fight win streak. Dan Lozon's coming in. He's won his last two fights. And you said you might try to TKO him or submit him, but how do you think you match up with him overall?
I think we're a great match for each other overall. I think that's why they put it together, because both of our styles kind of should be a bit of a pain for the other person. And that being said, that usually makes a good fight. And it should. I think it'll be a longer fight. I think that the crowd will get to see something that's you know, a long, grueling war.
Talking to Noah Wiseman, competes this Saturday night against Dan Lozon for the 155-pound championship, the world championship fighting. So take us through the life of a young fighter like yourself, someone that is kind of, you know, you're coming up in an era that. People, there's more eyes on you. The potential to be seen is a little bit better, obviously, with, you know, YouTube clips, Twitter and Facebook, all that. Talk about, you know, where you think you're at right now and how you're trying to get noticed by some of the bigger promotions like the UFC and Strikeforce and Bellator, and what you're kind of what you've learned and what you're how you're trying to get noticed by those groups and potentially get a shot down the road.
I think you made a really good point with the whole social networking deal, because I'm starting to get into this Twitter thing. You know, I've got a website up, and I'm a car salesman by trade, so I know how to do all the marketing and how to talk to people and how to just build relationships. And I think that the more relationships you build, whether it be face to face, whether it be on the computer, telephone, whatever, you know, it may be, I think that's how you're going to get noticed, because the more friends you have, the more people are going to talk and the more people are going to watch and see if this guy is actually what he says. And, I think that, you know, the route that I've taken here, and I've really, you know, pushed a lot of things and tried to, I went with, WCF, with World Championship Fighting originally, you know, because they get great press, you know, everything that they do, I saw it on Sherdog all the time, and I knew that they had really good competition as well. So I got in with them, and I fought for them those first couple of times. And then I said, let's give me a really tough fight. I want everybody to know that I'm a tough guy. I want people to look at me and say, hey, this is a guy that means something. You know? So they ended up giving me John Benoit. I lost that fight. It was my third pro fight. He was, 9-2 at the time. And, I was 2-0. I went into the fight. It was a great fight. It went to a decision. I was on the losing side, but I think it got me out there in a sense of, this guy can hang, you know, he's fun. He's out there. He's doing what he likes to do and he's having a good time. And, you know, I've just been really trying to get onto all the websites and just let everybody see me. I think that the more presence that you have, the more likely the bigger shows will notice you and want you to be a part, because if you have a big fan base already, then I think that means a lot to them.
See, it's interesting you say that, and refreshing that you say that, because a lot of young fighters in that same position, they don't seem to get that, right? They don't know how to market themselves, and obviously the UFC is kind of, you know, these fighter summits they have every year, and social media being brought up so much, and the fact that UFC is actually giving bonuses for increasing Twitter followers. I mean, they're kind of laying the blueprint for what their younger fighters should do. So it's almost like, you know, they're looking for guys obviously that can fight and can compete, but they're also guys that kind of have that whole package. And it sounds like you figured that out early on.
Yeah. You know, it's been something that I've always figured out. You know, I've been selling cars since 2001, I want to say, you know, 10 years now. And I've just seen the way that business has went and just the way sales in general have moved forward. And I, you know, being an athlete, you have to sell yourself. So in everything, in looking for sponsors, in the way you talk to people, you need to be able to sell yourself. Even the matchmakers, you have to sell yourself. If you're out there representing yourself, which is what I've done, I've chosen not to have a manager, but you need to be able to convince people that you deserve a shot one way or another. And that's what I've been doing this whole time.
Now, we mentioned you're from Burlington, Vermont. The Boston Bruins goaltender Tim Thomas spent his college years up at UVM, 4 years up there. Can I ask, are you a Boston Bruins fan or a Boston sports fan? Were you following the Bruins in the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I'm a UVM fan, so it was kind of tough with St. Louis there too. But but at the same time, Tim Thomas, I went to the Frozen Four that year when they made it in Lake Placid. I went out there with my father and my sister because we used to have season's passes to all the UVM games. I watched UVM hockey, you know, growing up all the time. That was, you know, it was a fun thing to do. We'd go to the games throughout our high school years. And so it was fun to see Tim Thomas, you know, succeed like that. Everything that he did was awesome, you know. Congrats to him, man. Great job.
So you said you are a car salesman by trade. I'm going to give you the opportunity right now to sell the public listening to this right now. That's going to hear this on the radio and hear on the internet. You and Dan Lauzon, sell this fight.
Sell this fight. Me and Dan Lauzon are going to put on the regional fight of the year. What's going to happen out there you're not going to be able to see anywhere else aside from world championship fighting. This is a basically a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And, you know, everybody's saying, hey, one of these guys is going to go to the next level. You know what? Both of us might go to the next level because the loser of this fight is still going to look good because it's going to be that good of a fight.
Well, you sold me. Well done. Before we let you go, Noah, plug any sponsors, social media you were talking about before. Go for it.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to thank undergroundclown.com, Cageside MMA, The Rehab Zone, visualrhythm.com, warriorroots.com, and of course, check out noahweissman.com and check out wcfighting.com to get your tickets if you haven't gotten your tickets yet. I know I've sold, you know, close to a couple hundred tickets up here in Vermont alone. So I know that there's going to be a lot of people at this show. So get them if you still can. I don't know if they're sold out. Hopefully they're not. But definitely get on, get tickets, because the more people there to watch this event, the better. I also want to thank everybody that I train with. You know, the guys at Rail City MMA, my partners, my trainers, Tom Murphy, Orlando Quiroz, and then all the outside gyms that I had a chance to go to. I trained with Julio Fernandez and the BJJ Revolution team. I stopped into Way Crew down there in Boston. I got to work out with John Howard and Crew John there. I'd like to thank them. I'd also like to thank Faraz Zahabi up at Zahabi MMA. I got to go there and get some sparring in. That was really nice of them to let me jump in with the pros and just, you know, see where I stand. And one of the other jiu-jitsu guys I go to, Trevor Sargent, you know, I'd like to thank him too. And I'd like to thank you guys for having me on the show. It was a fun time.
That was great. This Saturday night, WCF. Actually, I'm promoting this. I mean, Noah did such a good job. Anyway, this Saturday night, the 155-pound championship for World Championship Fighting, Dan Lauzon versus our guest, Noah Weissman. Noah, best of luck to you. Thanks for joining us. And again, more good luck Saturday night.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good night.
We will be back in just a minute. Well, that was a great segment. Back in just a minute with we're going to preview Strikeforce, a beginner's guide to Strikeforce. Coming up next, this is the MMA Show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio, WGAM, The Game. WGAM Show, the MMA Show on WGAM is back. We are closing up shop here. Last segment of the night, we talked to Noah Weissman from World Championship.
Great Fight. Interview with Noah Weissman.
That dude can talk, which
he's
is good.
He's not kidding you. He's a car salesman. That's good. That's a key attribute to have, is to be able to be a good talker.
And one of the questions I asked him about, you know, kind of the layout of what the UFC has done with saying you got to be involved in Twitter, got to do this, got to do this. Part of being a fighter is self-promotion. I think so many fighters still don't understand that they want to just go out there and fight. It's part of it, but there are so many people right now competing in MMA across the country that they're trying to get noticed. If you have a guy that's A and B, they're basically the same fighter. Say they're like Noah, 5-1, you know, good BJJ background, good stand up, compete against some tough guys. But one guy can talk, has a following, gets it. The other guy doesn't. Who do you think the UFC is going to take? They're going to take the guy. They're going to take A. They're going to take a guy like Noah that can talk the talk and walk the walk, literally.
I think they'd, especially at least give him more of a, be willing to be giving him more of a chance. If he can talk his way into it. But then, you know, once you get into the octagon, you have to prove it.
Absolutely.
You have to go out there and Dana White loves the guys that'll say, I will fight any guy. Just put anybody in front of me. I will fight this guy. Line it up as soon as you can. He loves that attitude. Those are the fighters he really, really wants. And you add on to the fact, like, and get to a level like Chael Sonnen as far as being able to talk and sell a fight, you know, absolutely. He loves that.
You can become a megastar without being a champion.
Yeah.
If you talk, promote, make no mistake about it. It is an entertainment business. Just like any sport these days, it is entertainment. That is, people that forget that, they don't get it. It's fight promotion. Just like, you know, the playground. You're like, this person's going to fight this person, and this is at stake, and here's a backstory, and all this stuff. It's the same thing. But so many people, like, they don't get that. Noah does, and that was a great interview. Talk a little bit about UFC 131 happened this past weekend, and talked all kinds of good stuff. So actually, tell people where they can find the archives of our show in case they missed it.
You go to WGAMradio.com, and you look under shows. You go to the WGAM MMA show. All our shows are listed on our page there. You can also check out our blog. You got a link there, WGAMMMA.blogspot.com, and also our Twitter at WGAM_MMA.
Let's talk about Strikeforce.
Let's.
And Strikeforce is an organization that a lot of people may have heard of but never have seen before. And I know, PJ, you admit you're a little bit of a Strikeforce
newbie. Little green on Strikeforce. I don't have the Showtime network, so I'm not really exposed to that. You know, they were on CBS, a few times.
Twice, three times.
Yeah, something like that. So not really enough to garner a lot of exposure. Mm-hmm. Most MMA fans, I'm sure, have seen the last time that Strikeforce was on CBS and Jake Shields fought and Jason Mayhem Miller got into the ring and then a brawl ensued. And that's kind of really the only thing you know about that. But we're going to play a little MMA role-playing here. I'm going to play the part of a guy who's into the UFC,
All right.
Watches the Ultimate Fighter. I've just started paying for pay-per-views. I'd like to reach out, you know, expand my knowledge now of more and get into more just MMA, not just UFC. Strikeforce, I've heard of it. I've never seen it. Good things about Strikeforce. Why should I start watching Strikeforce?
So you want me to be a car salesman?
Yeah. I want you to play Noah Wiseman.
And
pitch me on Strikeforce. Why should I be interested and why should I care about Strikeforce?
Well, Strikeforce is owned by Zuffa, the same organization that owns UFC. That sale was made in March of this past year, which was a pretty big surprise. They were essentially the number two MMA organization in the world, definitely North America and pretty much in the world. So they came along and bought them, and they were a primarily California-based promotion, smaller group, had a lot of guys that didn't want to compete in the UFC for whatever reason. They just didn't like either the controls. They didn't like the essentially a lot of the control. You know, Nick Diaz comes to mind, and guys that had been kind of cut from the UFC or just didn't let go contractual reasons, wanted more money, and Strikeforce is able to gobble those people up. Primarily a TV product, does not run pay-per-views, never has run a pay-per-view, but it's got some talent, and that's one of the reasons I think that UFC, if they wanted to buy them, is because not only did they have some talent, but they also had airing. They had a television on Showtime, which is a entity that Dana White had not necessarily got along with in the past when they were negotiating contracts. And they wanted to buy out their competition. But there are some great young fighters, and we'll actually kind of go through this card. Basically what's going on right now is there's a heavyweight Grand Prix, which is a tournament. And the winner of the tournament is going to fight the heavyweight champion. However, the heavyweight champion is also in the tournament, so figure that one out. So, Alistair Overeem.
So he would, if he loses the Grand Prix, does he still be champion? Are these title fights?
Yes. There's no title.
They're not title fights.
No. So the champion's in there, and those fights are 3 5-minute rounds. So the idea is that the champion the winner should probably get a title shot. However, if the champion wins, then that's going to all moot. So then you can say he should fight the UFC champion. That's a story for another day. Anyway, champion Alistair Overeem, a guy that's fought primarily over in Japan, is also a killer kickboxer. Looks like a bigger version of The Rock, essentially. Very one of those. He looks like a movie star, right? He's just a good-looking dude, can fight, well-spoken. He fights Fabricio Werdum. Werdum is the man that defeated Fedor for the first time in over 10 years. These two go at it. This should be a great fight on top.
Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about Alistair Overeem before, and you just mentioned kind of a bigger version of The Rock. And from what I understand of him, you know, his MMA career was, you know, not really necessarily, he wasn't taking off, but then he went and started kickboxing. Is that correct? I believe.
He's always done both. But yeah. There have been some runs. So he'll just do these runs where he'll focus on kickboxing and MMA and all this.
All right. Yeah, I'm just going to take you back here at least for his MMA fights. And we'll go back to 2006. In May of 2006, a loss to Fabricio Werdum.
This is a rematch.
Yes. Fight against this is at Pride. Mm. His first fight in Strikeforce against Vitor Belfort. Recently come back, has come back to the UFC.
Yep, fights in August.
Won that fight, lost his next three. Won his next one, lost his next one. That was September of 2007. He has not lost since. He says starting in this next fight, November of 2007 up until now, he had won no contest in 2008 against Mirko Filipovic.
Mirko Krokop.
Krokop, yeah. who's been relegated to the preliminary cards, by the way.
Yeah.
Coming up, I think that was at 33, at UFC 133, or 135 now, whatever's next fighter. Yeah, he's been relegated from the main card now from his past performances.
Yeah, so Overeem's opponents have been, lately have been a little, you know, not world class, which some people are kind of wondering what's going to happen in this one. I pick Overeem to win this one. I think he's on a great roll. Just a very personable fighter. So a guy that you'll have fun watching, put it that way. The other quarterfinal this Saturday is Josh Barnett, former UFC heavyweight champion from an era long, long ago, goes against Brett Rogers, a guy that is really should be considered a prospect, but Strikeforce kind of threw him to the wolves early. They matched him up against Fedor. He hung in with Fedor for a while, but then lost, got a lot of respect after that. They then put him against Overeem, which did not go well at all. And Rogers has not fought for Strikeforce since the Overeem fight. He fought once in Canada.
W1 Newground.
Which was just, if there's anything that tells you what was wrong with Strikeforce before, the fact that their fighters had to go other places to find fights when they're coming off essentially two back-to-back main events, that just is ridiculous. So if that kind of tells you about why they were bought, how things are running better now, Barnett versus Rogers. Interesting because no one was really sure what Barnett has left. It's not like he's been super active over the last year, 2 years. Pretty famously known for having issues with steroids in the past and having to get relicensed. One of the reasons that this event is in Texas, which their commission is known to be a little light, I guess you could say, when it comes to their regulation. Not to say that he's on anything, but this has been a whole big dramatic thing. So interesting because Barnett is, I believe, 33, if I remember right, and we're not really sure what he has left. So Josh Barnett and Brett Rogers coming up in the co-main event this Saturday night.
Yeah, his last loss back in December 2006, and he's on a 6-fight win streak since then. You say you might not see how much he has left. I guess this will be a test for him, really, to see. But
you mentioned that win streak, but look
at the fights.
Look at the dates.
March 2008, May of 2008, July of 2008, January 2009, March 2010, July of 2010.
Yeah.
There's his last 6 fights.
Mm. I don't know. We'll see.
A couple times in Affliction, one time for Dream, his last fight for Impact FC.
Yeah, that was a big...
against Geronimo Dos Santos.
Mm.
Any relation to Junior?
Very well could be. Yeah.
He does not look like Junior Dos Santos.
You know what? But Barnett could kind of reintroduce himself to the mainstream audience this Saturday and reestablish himself, or he could get knocked out and Brett Rogers takes that mantle. Running out short on time here, so really quick over the rest of the card. This Saturday on Showtime, KJ Nunes and George Masvidal. That's going to be for the 155-pound number one contendership. The next guy to be next in line for Gilbert Melendez. Daniel Cormier versus Jeff Bonson. Really interesting fight. Daniel Cormier is a big-time heavyweight prospect, an Olympic wrestler. Jeff Monson, the anarchist, is probably the best way he can be known. He has fought all over the world. The definition of a veteran. Tough test for Cormier. And then the opening show, Alistair's brother, Valentin Overeem, takes on Chad Griggs. Griggs is a guy that beat Bobby Lashley and wore him out, and then beat another fighter who is escaping me right now, but is an interesting kind of prospect. I guess you call him a prospect. He's kind of an older guy, but Chad Griggs, Valentin Overeem definitely would be a unique look, I guess you could say, for the opening fight on Showtime.
Gian Piero Vellante, I'm going to say, is how you pronounce it.
John Vellante.
John Vellante.
Yeah. So that's going to be a great show coming up this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. I tell you what, if you've never seen Strikeforce before, watch this event. Even if you're going to do the thing where you get Showtime for a night and all this, it's going to be pretty fun. There's going to be some undercards. Who knows if those will make the main air. Whew, good show. We open up the show talking about UFC 131. Hooray, Bruins!
Yes, absolutely, hooray, Bruins.
Hooray, Tim Thomas. Hooray, Noah Wiseman. He fights this Saturday night, World Championship Fighting. WCFighting.com, get all the information. Go, if you're not doing anything, DVR the Strikeforce event and go to the WCF event. Should be a lot of fun. Talked a lot about Strikeforce and all kinds of other things in the world of MMA.
Yeah, well, back to the UFC talk heavy, I'm sure, next week. We'll have a little review of this weekend.
Yeah, next week, actually, Bellator CEO Bjorn Rebney joins us live Thursday night. Boy, a lot of stuff going on. This is going to be a light show. So for PJ Hewitt, I'm Josh Nason. This has been the WGAM MMA Show. And until next week, keep your chin tucked and your hands up.